welcome to Copper Country Today, heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on 1400 AM, 99.3 FM, WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBAR 102.3. Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, proud supporters of the Copper Country Humane Society and the Keweenaw Spay and Neuter Assistance Group. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at KeweenawReport.com. My guest on today's program currently represents the 38th District in the Michigan Senate, and he is seeking re-election in a few weeks. Senator Tom Kasperson, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's get started. First topic I want to ask you about is one that's involving the two proposals that are on the ballot involving the wolf hunting issue. From your perspective, from the people that you've spoken with, do you feel like there is a wolf problem specifically in the Western Upper Peninsula?
Yeah, there is a wolf problem, and now it's, we knew it was over on the East End as well and across the UP, but now it's expanded. And there's hot spots on the East End, just like there is on the West End, with the animals being killed. Farmers are struggling with it, and hunters that go in the woods with their dogs are losing their dogs. So it's perpetuating into a bigger problem, I believe, across the UP. And I live in Escanaba, and we have them down this way as well. So it's something that's not regulated or not controlled somewhat is going to continue to grow. And so that's something that I think needs to be addressed.
And, I mean, for those on the other side who say that there are other methods of controlling the wolf population, what would you say to them?
Well, I think they know better, quite frankly. I'll give you a quick example. They talk about farmers have the right to shoot and protect their animals. Well, so do I. I have the right to shoot and protect my dog when I put my dog outside. I have the right to do that if a wolf is coming. The problem with that assessment is these people are saying it know full well that a farmer is not going to sit up 24/7 watching his herd out in the field. We had one farmer on the West End that called us, and it was not the Koski farm. It was a different farm. It's the other thing that keeps getting perpetuated. It's only one farm. That's totally a lie. That's not true. This particular farmer heard the disruption in the fields. It was in the summer, so he had his windows open, so he heard it. Woke up, went out with his vehicle. There's a wolf. He got out, took a shot to scare the wolf out of the field. He tried to get him. He thinks he missed him. And so what did the farmer do? The farmer stayed up the rest of the night driving around the field in his pickup to make sure that the herd could get some rest. So when they say that, that's what they're suggesting. They're suggesting that a farmer is going to either hire somebody or they themselves are going to be on 24 hours a day watch. That's totally impossible. It can't be done.
Another topic I wanted to hit on was one that you have been involved in, as well as the other local lawmakers, Scott Dianda, Ed McBroom, John Kivala, and that's the drug issue in this area. And it seems like every week you hear about this meth lab got busted, this meth lab got busted. I think last week in Ishpeming, two meth labs within a few blocks of each other got busted. What would be your plan if you are reelected going forward on how to continue to bring this problem down?
Well, we've got to make sure law enforcement has the tools they need. And one of the things they keep telling us is that people are trying to find ways around going into a local drugstore and purchase the ingredients that they need to produce this stuff. And some of what they need is pretty much basic things in a drugstore that you and I could just go buy off the shelf. So when we've got to give law enforcement the ability to track some of this stuff, and that's where it gets a little dicey, because law-abiding citizens could be lumped into something like this and they get concerned about it. But I think we're reaching a level with this problem that we've got to take some measures. So they've got to know and then be able to track and then identify who's going around and gathering up these products. One of the ways you do that is you find out who's buying a lot of it. That's, you know, abnormal amounts, or if you can find them and track them where they're going to multiple drugstores trying to get this stuff. And so those kind of things need to be looked at. On the other end of it, when it comes to actual law enforcement and dealing with these labs that you're talking about, very expensive. and the burden has really fallen on the state police. And so it's expensive because this stuff is so toxic. When they go into buildings, there's huge cleanups involved with this stuff after they go into one of these labs. You just don't bust the lab and then destroy the stuff that they produce. It's walls in a building, as an example, got to be clean because this stuff can attract this stuff. This stuff gets on you, and it's bad. And so there's a money component to this thing that we've got to help the state police dealing with it, because it's not fair just to lump this burden on them and then tell them we'll figure out how to pay for all this. So those two components have to be addressed. So it really does come down to law enforcement and us working together with them.
I spoke with Representative Scott Dianda in the first segment, and he talked about how everywhere he goes, people are just complaining about this issue. From your constituents, what have you heard about them, and how important is community involvement in bringing down the meth problem in the UP?
Well, it's important, and it's all the drugs that are being abused and used in our communities, especially with our young people and you know, destroying their lives. It's huge, because if the communities are sensing there's something wrong, they can assist law enforcement just simply by identifying it, turn the information over to them, and then they can proceed from there. It's more of the eyes and ears on the ground type of thing for our constituents, and they should participate if they think something's wrong, and let law enforcement know what's going on, and then let them deal with it.
You're listening to Copper Country Today, here with my guest, Senator Tom Casperson. Let's hit on another issue that not only is it getting recognition locally, but nationally, and that's the use of marijuana recreationally. What is your take on that, and would you see yourself, if you were reelected, would you see yourself supporting similar legislation that was passed in Colorado and Washington State?
I would not. In fact, you mentioned Colorado. There was a report a while back after they had legalized marijuana. School personnel now are dealing with it in the schools out in Colorado, and they had third graders in a bathroom smoking marijuana out in Colorado.
Wow.
So allowing, just thinking this is casual stuff and it's no big deal, I don't know. I'm really concerned when I see where we're heading as a people in this country that are suggesting it's no big deal. That just to me is wrong, and it's wrongheaded, and it does nothing to help our young kids as they're growing up to set a foundation for them and try and help set them on a good path going forward. The people that supported medical marijuana had an element of sense to it. It made sense. If doctors felt that somebody, you know, critically ill, somebody that had a cancer that they couldn't beat it, and they were in a lot of pain, and marijuana is the only thing that could give them some relief, I think people have compassion and thought, okay, if that's what they needed for. Well, then we find out, we see just the opposite. We've had, down in Lansing, they had to shut some of them down. They had every other street corner had somebody that was giving out medical marijuana. Well, common sense would tell you, let's see, college town, thousands of kids, and every other corner's got one, and everybody seems to be going in getting medical marijuana. So there was an abuse right out of the gate with it, and it hasn't stopped. You got people that are growing it in their backyards. That caused a problem for law enforcement, because people that wanted the marijuana, and then now they knew that the neighbor down the street was growing it, well, now we started with break-in problems. And it just goes on and on. And it just concerns me that we're so casual about this stuff and the effects it has on our children. I just don't see it.
Alrighty, let's jump to a topic that I feel like it's been going back and forth, and there really wasn't a clear solution with it, and that's with the road funding. And like I said, it's been bounced around, and we're trying to figure out where the money is going to be coming from. Do you think maybe election season had something to do with it, with the delay, but is this something that is going to be done soon, a solution to the roads? Or is this battle going to be continuing?
Yeah, I hope soon. I know they put together a task force right after we broke in the Senate and came back into the district because we tried in the Senate and couldn't get it through. And so the task force is petitioned with coming up with some some solutions that we can all collectively look at and then and hopefully be able to do something in this last part of our session before the end of the year. So I hold out hope that we can still get something accomplished, but it's a tough issue. It's a big issue. And so anytime you're talking about needing more revenue, which means we have to go to the people to get that revenue, that gets to be a very difficult thing. And that's why we've been dealing with this thing since 2000. I went in 2003 into the House, and this issue was there then, and we have not been able to come up with an agreement amongst everybody. And this thing is something that crosses party lines. It's not a Republican thing. It's not a Democrat thing. It's really a financial thing that everybody is concerned about, because everybody knows people are hurting out there, and times are tough. And to ask them for more is a difficult thing to do.
And Governor Rick Snyder did say on his State of the State address that he wanted $1.2 billion for roads by the end of the year. Where do you feel like that revenue or that money should come from?
Well, the best avenue is really the users across the board, across everybody across the board, and it's those that use the highways, and that, to me, is probably the best scenario. It's a matter of how do you set the formula up. And I think our formula right now, the way we do it through Act 51, they call it Act 51, the bill that was passed in 1951, it's been modified and changed many times, so it's not like it's the same bill that was in 51, but it's a good formula in that it makes sure that the money goes to everybody. If you get the money, that's something that's got to be, I think, somewhat protected through this process, because you got those that are Oakland County be an example. They got a lot of representatives because they're so big and the population's big. They'd like to change Act 51 because they want more or the lion's share of the money because they believe more cars are down there. Well, that hurts the formula and everybody getting their share, and it creates a real problem for rural Michigan, not just the Upper Peninsula, but anywhere in lower Michigan that's populated kind of like we are. So we've got to hold fast on that. But ultimately, we've got to get this money to go through the formula, and I don't know how we get around the fact that we need more money, and it's got to be spread out, as I said, over everybody. If you try to target one group, then the cost becomes too burdensome for one group to handle. It's got to be, you know, all people have to be at the table on this one.
So what about the gas tax?
Well, that's where the problem is. My solution is you eliminate the sales tax, get it off of gasoline. Right now we have 6% sales tax on gasoline. Get it off of there, because that money that comes from the sales tax, or the sales tax takes from gasoline, none of it goes to the roads, and most of it's constitutionally in place. So we can't change the 6% how it's spent. We can take it off of it, but we can't change how it's spent. That's a vote of the people would have to happen for that. But the lion's share of that money goes to education. So if we remove the 6% sales tax on gasoline, now we've created a pretty good-sized hole for education, and that needs to be fixed. So I would propose a 1% sales tax, add to the 6%, make it 7%. That money be dedicated to education. That takes it right off the table. It fixes education. And then we backfill gasoline with a wholesale percentage that would be equivalent to the gas tax as we know it today, the amount that's there today that's being taken from gasoline. So you don't raise gas. You don't have to raise it. But now we can take every dime of the tax that's on gasoline and put it right into the roads. And once that's done, then we'll find this thing, I think, solved. But it's a heavy lift because it takes participation from both the legislature and then ultimately a vote of the people.
You're listening to Copper Country Today here with my guest, Senator Tom Casperson. When the talk turns to school funding, there seems to be two sides. And I know you got this question a lot over the past weekend, but one side claims that $1 billion has been spent, and one side claims that $1 billion has been lost. What is your take on that situation, that opposition?
Yeah, well, the way you just described it, both sides are right. The problem has been, though, and I noticed that through the forums that I went at, my opponent finally changed his line as far as what he was saying, and rightfully so he changed it, and that was that the governor, or we in the legislature, took $1 billion away from education. We did not do that. And I, as I explained it, and if you heard me, I told people that I'd answer it two ways. I was going to give them a political answer the first time, and then I would correct it and say, here's what's actually happened. And my political answer was that President Obama took that money from Michigan's public school. And when we came into office in 2010, the money was taken from us, and at the end of it, it was federal dollars that were taken. And then at the end, when we got in, we were faced with that big hole that they keep talking about, that $1 billion that they keep bringing up. That was taken from the federal government. We were faced with it. So what we did, we maintained state-level funding and started adding to it as soon as we could, to the point over a short period of time, 4 years, we were able to backfill all of that money and get them back and then beyond. So that's the political answer as far as where the money went. The real answer is President Obama gave Michigan stimulus money. Everybody remembers the stimulus package. And they, education and the former administration, used that stimulus money and put into education about $470 per student for the years 08, 09. They knew that was only one-time money. They knew the federal government wasn't going to keep sending the money. President Obama didn't promise to. That's why I say it was political in the beginning, because I blame President Obama. Well, that's not fair to him. He told us up front it was one-time money. So why did we infuse it into education, letting everybody believe it was going to be there forever? That's exactly what they did. Then we were stuck with the problem when we came in 2010. So what has happened in this election cycle is they've made a big issue out of, we took the money. I would submit to you that's a half-truth, bordering on a lie, but it sure makes for a good political fodder, because people don't know, and so they think, my goodness, they cut $1 billion out of education. Simply was not true. It was one-time money put in, federal money, it wasn't state money, that was added to the already foundational allowance that the state had put in. That's the truth of where that money came from.
How important do you feel is vocational training to the Copper Country?
I think vocational training is probably the key and one of the most important issues we're faced with. And I would say not just the Copper Country, but across the state of Michigan and probably across the country, because too many years have gone by where, and I think this is a combination of things. I think parents play a role in this. The schools play a role in this, but our young people have been continually convinced that a college degree is the answer, period. And unfortunately, a lot of our kids have bought into that, and so they're not even, in some cases, looking at the vocational avenue, when, in fact, what we know now is that on the vocational side of things are where the real job growth is and where there's very serious money involved, good paying wages. A good career for these young people that have some talent in these areas, and we have not nurtured it because we've been so focused on making sure every child gets a four-year degree that we left this sit on the shelf, and now we're revamping, trying to correct that direction and really focus on our children and where their talents lie, what do they want to do, and they got to know the opportunities are there before they can explore it. So we're trying to fix it. And vocational training, I think, is the key to it. And it's an educational problem, but it's a matter of where our kids go and the path they choose for that education. And education as a whole needs some help here, because we in the legislature told them through curriculum, the kind of core curriculum that we passed years back in the days I was in the House, that we really did a college prep course. We've now changed that, and so we got to get them back on track. It's going to come down to some money, because they were geared up for college, sending kids to college, and it wasn't their fault. We told them to do it.
Finally, I do want to hit on what might be the biggest issue and something that's going to be costing people a lot of money, and that's the energy crisis in the Upper Peninsula. What have you heard from Lansing about what's going on here with the issue with the Presque Isle power plant and the rising costs that are looking to take effect? Some are saying by December 1st.
Yeah, it's become Governor Snyder, for us in the UP, it's been Governor Snyder's number one issue. He's put Valerie Brader in charge up here. She's been here regularly. She is, she's been brilliant on this stuff. I mean, even, and again, it's not a Republican-Democrat thing when you sit down and talk about it. Everybody on both sides of the aisle agrees she knows her stuff. She's trying to break through some of these barriers that we've been given to try and figure out a solution. We're getting there. There's been several alternatives put on the table, but I'm going to say, ultimately, though, we got to stop looking at today and say, you know, the crisis we're faced with today as if this is the problem, because I'm convinced this is a symptom of the problem. And the real problem we're faced with in this, not just here, but across the country, and I got to believe there's other pockets and other regions in the country that have coal fired plants like we do that are going to be facing the same exact problem. This is a direct relation to what the EPA has proposed for 2017, which is, I'm now more convinced than ever, this is an absolute war on coal, and they want these power plants shut down. So the way they do it is they raise the standards so high, and that's what they've done, that the power companies, in this case We Energies, because of other circumstances, are suggesting, why would we put the kind of money that it's going to take to try and ever meet that standard? It's millions and millions of dollars. Why would we do that? Because the plant doesn't have that much, it's not dead. The plant has a lot of life left, but not that much life left in it where we could get the money out of that plant, putting all that money in. I guess we'll have to shut that one down. Then that started the wave of all this other stuff that we're dealing with. And that's where I see the problem. And people, I think we as a citizen have to start making the decision, are we going to buy into this notion that we've got to be green to the level it busts our bank, it busts our budget, we can't move forward. It's a job killer. I mean, we've got mining opportunities up here as an example. If you drive the electrical rates so high by trying to reach these issues that the EPA and others like them keep pushing, they can't afford the power. It won't be lucrative to come in and mine anymore, because we'll drive the cost of mining right through the roof, because power is critical for mining and a lot of manufacturing. So you drive that right out of the region, and that's never talked about. So we have got to get serious about this green energy issue. The windmills and the solar panels, they are not going to fix this. In fact, if you look at what's going on down the Garden Peninsula right now, where they put a bunch of wind farms in, I've got a community in my district that's tearing itself apart over the windmill. It's amazing to watch it. And I've got people that are doubling down saying we want to put more in. And that's where we're running into problems. So the electrical problem we're faced with is a multifaceted problem. But the foundation behind it started when they proposed those standards. That was the beginning. And now you're seeing all this other stuff come out on top of it, which is just making it even more difficult. I think we got to have a balance. By the way, Presque Isle is a good plant, good paying jobs. There's a lot of people working there. That plant has a lot of life left in it, and it has a lot of the pollution mechanisms within the stacks that were required before. I would just say, don't let people convince you other than that, because they're making it sound like this thing is old, antiquated, and, you know, just spewing out a bunch of pollution. That is not true. And so here we are trying to deal with it. It is as if it is, and the cost is going right through the roof.
Are there any plans to create some form of a regionally produced energy to maybe keep it within instead of having to go out of state for it?
Absolutely, and that's the goal. When I mentioned Val Brader, that's her task, and we need partners there. And that's where the problem comes in, because you have to have a home for that new generation if you're going to make it. And that means somebody's got to be willing to sit down and negotiate a purchase price for the power. And we need large entities to justify building new plants, which hence mining comes to mind, to sit down with some of them to do that. It's a tough spot for the UP to be put in, because you really don't want to be in a position where you have to rely on a private company, a large entity, for your solution for power. And that's what we find ourselves faced with. But if that's the case, then let's sit down and put our best foot forward. And that's where everybody is right now. I know that Cleveland Cliffs has come to the tables. We Energies actually has now come to the table, and those things haven't been happening for a while. And so at the end of the day, we need everybody at the table, and that's where it is right now. And new generation is absolutely on the table. Natural gas is clearly the direction everybody's looking at, and if that's the case, I'm thinking two units would be the best, and then strategically place them in the UP for where the power is really needed, and which will save you on the transmission side of it. And the other thing is strategically place it where the natural gas is flowing, which saves you cost on that end of it.
Senator, anything you'd like to say finally to the voters?
Just a pleasure. It's been a pleasure serving in the last 4 years in the Senate. I look forward to serving the folks again in the next four. I think we've made a lot of improvements, changed the direction of the state in a positive way, and we just want to keep going.
All right, that'll wrap up this segment of Copper Country Today. Senator Casperson, thank you very much for joining me on today's program.
Thanks for having me.
For our listeners of WCCY, we will be leaving you shortly for Detroit Lions football. Those who are interested in my interview with Scott Dianda can catch it on KBAR 102 at 9:30 or listen to the podcast, which will be posted later today on QNLReport.com. For everyone else, we will be right back.